Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma. I am a senior fellow at the Institute. I'm joined today by Mustafa Uki, senior research fellow, natural gas program at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies, to discuss his recent paper, Egypt, A Return to a Balanced Market. Mustafa, great to see you. How are you today?
Good, very well, thank you.
Excellent. Well, look, now let's start by discussing the history of gas production and exports in Egypt. You know, what's happened that led Egypt to become a net gas importer in 2015 after being a gas exporter for 10 years?
Oh, that's quite interesting. when you look at it in terms of history from, I would say, the mid-2000 to about 2013, Egypt was a net exporter of gas, mainly in the LNG form, and it was done from the two liquefaction plant it has in Idku in the west and Damietta in the east. Yes, it did export gas to a pipeline, but it was mainly LNG.
Right.
And then it recorded a decline in indigenous gas production.
Right.
And a rapid domestic demand growth. Obviously, when you have this kind of situation, it led to shortage that emerged in the mid-2010.
Right.
And guess what? In 2015, they were importing LNG.
Exactly. Exactly. But do you think that reduction in domestic gas production was avoidable?
I would say yes to a certain extent. And I mean, this shortage, the situation that Egypt found itself in, was not a surprise.
Right.
It was not a surprise.
Okay.
So it was something that could, but you know, the environment, it goes beyond the oil and gas sector. We have to look at different factors.
Yeah.
So to answer your answer, it didn't come as a surprise, unfortunately.
And I'm sure we'll pick up some of that more in this podcast.
Yeah,
but the other side of it is, is of course demand. And I just wondered, whether domestic gas shortages were a function of higher than expected domestic demand. What was it? Was it demand or supply?
Both.
Both, was it?
Unfortunately, both. It's a combination of the two. There was a decline in indigenous gas production, and the demand for gas grew, especially a demand which was fueled by heavily subsidized prices. It's no longer exactly the case, but it was that kind of thing. If you look at the history initially when Egypt started developing gas and they started producing demand, there was a boom in demand. Of course, at that time, the volume was relatively low, so the burden was not that high, and it was manageable. Between quotation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, then, it got to a stage where, it became difficult to manage. And yes, it was both the supply and the demand side, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting about subsidized, one of the conclusions of the OIES Middle East book, which we wrote some years ago, was that subsidized prices just don't work in an economy.
They don't work. I mean, I would add something, indiscriminate subsidized prices.
Okay.
Because the issue of subsidy is, as you know, a very sensitive issue. It's a kind of reflects the contract that a social contract that the state has with its population. But everybody benefits from it.
Fair point.
Especially those who can afford to pay for the gas.
Good point. Well, let's come back to that. Let's first of all talk about some imports, because you mentioned a couple of seconds ago about the fact that Egypt's been importing LNG through its two floating storage and regas FSRU receiving terminals.
Yes.
And I wondered whether you could give us the status of those terminals. Are they both still in operation?
Yes. The two leased FSRU that EGAS has leased, the Hawk 1 and the BW, they're still there. They're still in Egypt. Initially, they were bought at Ain Sokhna on the Red Sea.
Right.
But it has been reported that the BW FSRU has been moved to the Sumed port south. The idea for EGAS, it's EGAS, EGPC, I think they have an involvement in that port, so they prefer to have the BW there. So both of them are there. Operation is a different thing.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Well, we'll come to Zohr in a minute, but presumably they're going to close at some point. So, what are the status of the... how long will they be there for?
Okay, right. Right now, they have the two FSRUs. Even at one stage, you were thinking about the third FSRU.
Lucky they didn't charter that one.
They didn't go ahead with that one. But now, looking at the two FSRUs and looking at... we're going to talk about it later, the future of the balance, the gas balance in Egypt, the need for import has diminished significantly.
Yes.
I think the last contract award was in June for, I don't remember, a number of cargoes. So they have two FSRU at the moment, and there has been discussion about an early termination of the second, well, not yet, the first FSRU that was leased, that is the Hog Gallant. So if you look at the agreement, I mean, according to what has been published on the agreement, for an early termination, it has to be done based on mutual agreement from the two parties.
Okay, right.
So, yes, you know, there's discussion about, you know, early termination, but in terms of timing, it will depend on when they will be able to reach an agreement.
Yeah, yeah, and mutually. Well, look, let's move away from LNG. And of course, the big change that we've seen in Egypt has been the new gas supply, and specifically Eni's discovery of the massive Zohr field.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge success, and the quick start of production has certainly been very impressive. You know, what drove the rapid development?
Yes, it's a realization, I would say, around early 2000, just after the Egyptian revolution, that they had to do something quick and drastic.
Right.
So if you look at the constraint in terms of indigenous gas production, what were the constraints? I mean, one of the key constraints was the gas price that was paid to the IOC, the International Oil and Gas Companies.
Yeah.
The price that was paid to those companies at that time was not attractive, didn't have the incentive not only to expand existing production, but go into a new production, especially in the high-cost, deep offshore area. So that was the first element. So they revised the gas pricing
mechanism. They sort out the domestic pricing.
They revised the gas pricing mechanism. It took a couple of years to get to that stage, but it was sorted out. And you can see in the report, you know, the different band that they were agreed. The second important aspect was the payment of arrear to IOCs. That is the payment that were due to IOC for the gas which was supplied to the state, e-gas mainly.
Well, previous gas supply.
Previous gas, and even, I mean, the idea, it got to a stage where in by the end of 2013, I believe, the arrears were about $6 billion, actually $6.3 billion, to be more precise.
Wow.
And right now, those areas have gone down, I believe, based on what has been reported, to $1 billion.
Okay.
So revising the gas pricing mechanism, payment of the arrear, and the third one, which is sometimes not looked at, you know, by people analyzing the market, is what I call institutional bureaucracy. The bureaucracy could be a monster that could stop a lot of things, i.e. permits, approval, and your project doesn't move. The government provided strong support, making sure that this obstacle was to a certain extent removed.
Right.
And it happened.
Which is difficult in some
countries. It's very difficult. And it's not specific to Egypt.
No,
cite a lot of countries which have that. No. But Egypt, and it was done, I would say, even at the very highest level.
It's interesting because if we have time, we'll talk about how quickly they put the LNG terminals in place. But it's the same thing. And it's getting over this bureaucracy. But and I think just, you know, are there any more Zohrs out there? You know, and, you know, how big could new gas supply be?
It's very difficult. You know, I'm not a reservoir engineer, but I see that the upstream activities are very dynamic at the moment. There were a certain stay a few weeks ago, or maybe a month or more, there were rumors that there was a major discovery made by Eni, but the CEO of Eni dismissed it. It was just about to. So we don't know. It's very difficult. We can't, I mean, personally, I can't answer this question. But you never know.
But if they, I think if the government sets the right incentives, it certainly it'll drive that. Why do we move to the other side, to the demand side now? You know, can you set out the structure of the domestic gas market? Because we talked briefly about it. You know, is it a power commercial or domestic sectors are the main source of demand?
Okay. The power sector is by far the largest user of natural gas in Egypt. It accounts for about 60. I mean, 2016, that's the latest data we have, it accounted for 62% right. of total demand consumed. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you have to say about the power sector, although the price of gas supplied to power sector has increased compared to the previous, it's still paying $3 as opposed to industry paying between $7 and $8.
Oh,
just
wow.
to give you an idea, okay, right, a flavor of what it is.
Yeah.
Going back to the structure, as I said, the power sector is by far the largest.
Right.
Then you have industries, about, I would say industries and non-energy use, the own use of the energy, they're all about 10, 11% each.
Right.
The non-energy use is whatever gas is used as a feedstock.
Okay, I understand.
You mentioned domestic sector. I believe you refer to residential sector.
Yeah,
yes. That's a good point, actually, because although the residential sector accounts for about, what is it, 3, 4% mm-hmm. of total demand, which is not big. But if you look at what the residential sector consumes in terms of electricity, which is mainly gas-fueled, the residential sector accounts for about 50%
wow.
of the electricity. So that's where the thing, the importance of the residential sector.
Interesting. And you know, and what's the view on you know, gas demand growth? Is it, do you expect it to increase over coming years?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the gas demand growth, you know, I mean, Economics 101 will tell you it depends on the economic growth, population, etc. But the key driver for future demand growth is going to be how domestic gas prices are going to evolve.
Yes, yes.
And to a certain extent also infrastructure availability, especially if you're talking about expansion, if you're talking about growth in new area, that's where things are.
So do I read between the lines there that domestic infrastructure is an issue, and has that been holding back gas demand growth?
Maybe I should clarify that.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic infrastructure, well, it depends if you go, for example, new area, that new capital that they're developing and everything. Yes, you're going to need new pipes.
Where's that? Where's the new capital then?
The answer is, I don't know exactly, but
that doesn't matter.
It's outside, it's trying to get people outside the old Cairo.
Yes,
but
okay.
It's not far from Cairo. It's not like Brazilia in the middle of nowhere.
Having been to Cairo, the traffic's pretty bad. So obviously, yes, they want to fortify it. Anyway, sorry, back to gas demand, sorry, yeah. Infrastructure.
But, you know, in terms of infrastructure, the government is very keen to develop economically some regions.
Right.
For mainly Upper Egypt.
Right.
And there has been, you know, infrastructure pipeline laid, you know, going to different sources, maybe few sources of gas use, but there isn't enough infrastructure. The issue is a kind of like the chicken and the egg. You have to have a commercially viable market to be able to expand. Now, for a long time, you know, the government wanted to develop that area, and I would say maybe not much attention was paid to the commercial aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is such, especially under the new gas market law and the way the market is going to be structured, it will depend on how viable the new or the potential market for gas would be in those areas.
Yeah.
There could be some areas where there is a need for expansion, but Egypt has a very extensive, you know, especially in the northern area and gas infrastructure. It's one of the largest in Africa, I think.
Right.
So, in terms of infrastructure, in the existing market, shouldn't be any problem. Maybe some reinforcement would be needed, maybe some addition, but I don't see it as a major issue.
It's an interesting one. Just on the issue of infrastructure and you know, talking about environmental considerations, you know, has that been a major driver of energy demand? Where does Egypt sit in the environmental story?
Well, I would say that what is important at the moment is supply availability and affordability.
Right.
However, the government strategy, energy strategy, and overall national economic development strategy emphasizes the environmental dimension.
Mm-hmm.
But at the moment, the focus is on making supply available, making supply affordable. These are the main important things.
Yeah,
but you see, it's not a missing element in government policies or thing. It's there every time, you know, the strategy is looked at.
Interesting. Okay, well, just picking up on that, making supply affordable, you know, where are we on domestic gas pricing? Because your paper concludes, to quote, it is difficult to justify the continuation of energy price subsidies to domestic gas monetization projects, both economically and financially. So I think my question is, you know, do you think that the market will ever be liberalized with prices set by supply and demand? Because that is the ultimately making supply affordable.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, and that's a point that comes back all the time. I mean, first of all, when we talk about liberalization, especially in the Egyptian context or the context of developing energy and developing economies, it has a different dimension, you know. Fundamentals are the same. You have to make sure you have to cover the cost and everything. But in the case of Egypt, when we talk about liberalization, we have seen some very encouraging signs in terms of the restructuring of the natural gas sector. Prices have been adjusted, and goes back to 2014 when prices were really adjusted upward in terms of, you know, different segments of the industry. I can come back to that.
Right.
But in terms of liberalization or restructuring of the gas sector, Egypt has enacted a gas market regulation law in in August 2017, and implementation decree was issued in February 2018. A gas market regulatory authority has been established, and they will be awarding a license to eligible customer, according to what they say, by the end of this year. And it will be for eligible customer to procure their own supplies. And this is very important, especially when you talk about the MENA, Middle East, North Africa region. It's one of the few countries, maybe the only one at the moment, which has taken those steps. So to go back to your question, liberalization, we are seeing a very encouraging step, positive step forward, but we shouldn't forget that it's a long process.
Well, it's interesting you said it, because, you know, your paper also, again, quoting, you know, liberalizing the country's energy market will inevitably take some time, possibly beyond 2030, as this will involve a complex combination of sensitive social, economic, and political factors. And we discussed earlier in the podcast the concept of pricing being part of a social contract.
Yes.
So I just wondered, you know, I know there's a complexity there, but isn't that an awful long time? We're talking about 12 years hence.
Yeah, I mean, when I talk about sensitive, it's mainly the power sector.
Okay.
This is a very strategic, sensitive sector. And you have to handle it very carefully.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, the objective is to remove indiscriminate subsidization of energy product in general. But then that has to come along with the protection of the vulnerable segment of population,
Right.
And that's why I'm saying it's going to take some time to implement. And that is going to be the main driver for future gas demand. Now, if you look at other sectors, I would say liberalization has already occurred. I mean, the removal of subsidies. You look at cement, the cement industries, the price charged for those producers is $8.
Okay, that's not a bad price.
And we saw the reaction. The market behaved according to what we'd expect. Cement producer stopped consuming natural gas. And they started consuming coal and maybe something else. So something has happened already. And we have seen some results. Now, and for industries, we're going to see more, because the price is also high for metal industries, which are relying on energy. So we see that. But for power, the reason why I made that comment is because it's going to be a gradual process, and it's going to be part of a number of things. In fact, all these reforms, the reform of the natural gas sector and the energy sector in general, it's a part of a package of reforms of the national economy, which is supported by international organizations such as the IMF, the World Bank, African Development Bank, EBRD. So there's a lot of efforts that are being deployed moving that way. But you have to give it time. This is not, I mean, even if we look at northwestern gas market, of US market, remember, it took a long time.
Well, let's look to the future now and, you know, see, you know, a question on your specific research. You know, does it identify any trends that could indicate what future government policy may be?
Well, in terms of the natural gas market.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, are we headed towards a totally, you know, supply-demand driven price, or do you think that the social contract is going to remain dominant?
They cannot afford to continue what they have been doing. In fact, they've changed.
Yes. What you've said. You've said that they have actually changed. Some brave changes.
And we have seen. Yeah, and this is, you know, very encouraging. It is a very challenging thing, but they have done it. Why? Because they don't have any other choice.
No. What about, therefore, the other side of that? And that's, you know, Egypt's position within the regional politics. And it's a sensitive area, we know. But, you know, the government aspires for the country to play a dominant role as a gas hub in the Eastern Mediterranean. Do you think that's realistic?
First of all, you know, for any East Mediterranean gas development, Egypt is bound to play a very central role.
Absolutely.
I mean, because of its market size, because of its infrastructure. Now, if we move to this concept of a regional energy hub, or we limit ourselves to the gas hub, it's something that needs to be looked at, first of all, from a commercial point, commercial and contractual point of view. People forget the contractual arrangement that are required to have this kind of cross-border activities. Yeah. If it's possible to develop commercially viable project, whether it's a gas coming from Cyprus or gas coming from Israel or whatever, first of all, you need to have a robust project. Before we talk about geopolitics, I mean, people tend to be kind of, they look at the headlines, politics and everything. Yes, I don't want to underestimate the geopolitical and the political factor. Mm. It is very important. It has been part of the energy equation in that region, another region, for a long time. However, you have to have a robust project. Otherwise, there is no need to think about risk mitigation, geopolitical risk mitigation policy, if you don't have a robust project.
Let's take it one stage further. If we have that robust project, I think we're beginning to see that now with the changes we've been discussing in this podcast in Egypt, you know. Do you think that regional politics and reality are going to stifle cooperation and commercial intercompany agreements? You know, basically, are we going to see pipeline gas exports to Israel and Jordan, you think?
I would say it will maybe, again, you know, I'm repeating myself, I don't want to underestimate geopolitics and political factor. Yeah. It will reduce maybe the speed at which, you know, the project will be developed.
Yeah.
But there's a new era, you know, in that region of the world.
It's exciting, isn't it?
They need each other.
I mean,
if you look at all the gas which is in that area, the East Med cannot consume all that gas.
No,
they have to find ways to make deals. Mm. And so things will happen, but again, it will take time.
Well, let's end up, therefore, on kind of the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
You know, and over the past kind of 20-25 minutes, we've been discussing a lot of issues. And I just really wonder, where will it all end up? You know, will Egypt return to being a balanced gas market, you know? And is it going to be that? Is it going to be a global player? Are we going to see Egypt back at the centre of the LNG business in the area, or pipeline business? What's your view?
First part of your question, a return to balanced market. They will be able to balance the market based on existing information and data. They have only a window, maybe up to the mid-2020.
Yeah.
But we don't know what is happening upstream.
Yeah.
Upstream and on demand side. So right now, they will resume exporting possibly in our next year.
Right.
It could happen. I mean, they could have this export window until the mid-2020 or maybe further, depending on what is happening. But right now, we don't know what is happening on the supply side. On the demand side also, do not forget the demand side. We don't know how the market in Egypt is going to react.
But it has to be the priority, because that's the economic growth of the country. Yeah, absolutely.
So they could be generating some excess thing. But it's a question of time again.
Time. I think that's the clear message that's come out of this. You know, a country which has done a huge amount to do, but you know, there's a lot of change going to take place there. Well, look, Mustafa, thank you very much for your time. And I have to say, as always, I've really enjoyed our conversation. It clearly tells us what's happening in the Egypt market and the potential gas and energy port exports that build upon your June 2018 paper, Egypt, a return to a balanced gas market. Now, this can be found at our website, www.oxenenergy.org, where you can also find all our podcasts in the multimedia folder and other papers published by the Institute. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, and thank you and goodbye to everyone.